A passion for shooting and hunting drives product innovation at Hodgdon Powder Company. Hodgdon is the leader in reloading information for enthusiasts and newcomers alike with the Reloading Data Center. HodgdonReloading.com.
It's a great day. It's Father's Day. Hey, welcome again. I'm Tom Gresham. It is Gun Talk. We're talking about guns and shooting and, well, safe gun handling, of course. We're talking about hunting as well, obviously. And, of course, we're talking about, well, stories about our dads, who a lot of times for a lot of us, our dads, he was the first person to get us into shooting and guns and fishing and camping and outdoor stuff and all the rest of it. So we're swapping stories if you want to be a part of that. If you want to share a story, just give me a call. The number is 866-TALK-GUN. That will certainly get you in here. I've been sharing some of the stories of my dad who, just as it works out, in 2 days would have turned 100 years old. Be his birthday on the longest day of the year, June 21st. First day of spring, or rather of summer, most years. Fun stuff. Look at some of the guns I still have that belong to him. It is truly fun to be able to hand these guns down, to hold on to them. Some I've already passed along to son, daughter, and granddaughters as well. At some point, I'll tell that story. Again, 866-TALK-GUN is our number. Let me bring in right now Lee Newton from Classic Sporting Arms. He's also kind of the guru of Ruger number ones and Ruger collecting and hunting. And Lee, I was just looking at the story on your website of that massive whitetail deer you got. Man, that is something else.
Well, that was a hunt, for sure.
And you shot him with your number one, of course.
Shot him with a number one. One shot.
One shot. So let me ask you this. You're kind of the guru, and I don't know if you're the president of the Ruger Collectors, but you're the go-to guy on number ones for sure. What is it about the Ruger number one single-shot rifle that is so intriguing?
Well, to me, it's the one class rifle that's been made in the last 50 years, introduced in the last 50 years. You know, you collect the Winchester Model 70, and it had its place for all those years. And if you look at the last 50 or 55 now, it's just a classic rifle, a single shot with classic lines, usually with nice wood, and they usually shoot well.
Okay, talk about that, because we were both at the Jack O'Connor Center in Lewiston, Idaho last weekend, and we were talking about that. And the idea, people still say, well, you know, the number ones really look good, and they're classic looking, but they really don't shoot that well. And you're saying, yeah, well, that hasn't been true for several decades. Talk about the accuracy and kind of what happened and how they got better.
Well, I don't know that I'm an expert on that, but in the beginning, in the 67 to early 70 time frame, the number ones used Douglas barrels. And then they were going to ramp up the production such that Douglas couldn't supply them, so they went out and, you know, bought contract barrels from whoever could supply them. So that's some of the barrels in the time frame that people say, well, they won't shoot. I've only ever had one number one that we couldn't get to shoot. It was a 25-06 made in about 1973 or 4. Hmm. Other than that, all of my had have shot plenty well for the hunting that I do. But the main point I like to tell people is that in 1992 or 3 is when Ruger installed their own hammer forge barrel making equipment. Mm-hmm. The Ruger barrels of today are as good as any factory made barrels out there. In fact, better than most, probably.
Well, and I have.
Yeah, you know, these 280 Ackleys have really shot well. I haven't had anybody yet tell me they wouldn't shoot.
Well, you know, and we ought to talk about that for a second because, you know, I was able to grab one of those from you because I think was the run on those was 125.
Well, it turned out to be 155 because we had 30 extras made there at the end. And by the way, they're all gone. There's not any of them left. These were the the rifles this to honor, you know, my number one mentor, Joe Clayton, and we had them serial numbered with a JDC prefix, and they were numbered from 1 to 155.
And these were chambered for the 280 Ackley improved with a special 25-inch long barrel, special run. I've got one of them.
Barrel, huh?
And I will tell you, mine is probably a 3/4 to 1 inch gun, and I am perfectly happy with that in a hunting rifle.
And the recoil is not that bad on them. And, you know, I'm so old, I don't like to get kicked anymore, and I'd give up on a 7mm rim mag years ago. And
right.
When I started shooting this thing, I couldn't believe the difference in recoil.
for a hunter, there's something else that a lot of people don't understand until they actually look at them or think about it. The Ruger number one has no repeating action. And so they are, I would call them somewhere in the order of 4 to 5 inches shorter because you don't have that repeating action. So you can have a 25 or 26 inch barrel on a number one, and it is no longer overall length than a 22 inch barrel on a bolt action.
That's true. You know, there's about 4.5 inches difference being shorter than, you know, most standard bolt actions, which is real handy, you know, carrying around, just handling it. They just handle better than me.
Well, I use my little 22-inch barrel 257 Roberts number one I've had for many, many years on my mule deer hunt last year, and it is just a dream to walk around with. It's just short. I was going to say light. They're not really light actions because there is a lot of metal in them, but they're not overly heavy at the same time.
No, they're not. And that 1A257 Roberts, yours probably only weighs about 7 or 7.25 pounds without a scope. And, you know, with a scope, you're up to just about 8 or right at 8.
Mm-hmm. No, it's
great. Light, even for old guys.
And so are they making them now? What's the status of the number one?
Well, it seems like with COVID, everything's on a hiatus, and it doesn't appear that any number ones have been made in about the last year and a half or something like that. We visited with the Ruger people at NRA, and they say, yep, we're going to make some next year. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
And, you know, and that's been true. You know, we had the combination of COVID and the run on guns where a company like Ruger saying, you know, look, just make the stuff that people really want to buy. Make the pistols, make the 9mm, make the 5.56s, get them out the door. And, you know, later on when things slow down, then we'll get back to making, you know, maybe some 77s, maybe some number ones. I think things are slowing down a little bit now. I'm seeing more guns available in gun stores, and certainly I'm seeing more ammo available these days.
Yes, I am too.
So if you had to just pick one up and go hunting with it, which one are you going to grab?
It's always the 280 Ackley. That's my gun. And I've been rather fickle over the last 10 or 15 years. You know, I got one of the 6.5 284s that came out in about 2013, and that was going to be my hunting rifle.
Right.
And then the 275 Rigby came out, the 1A with the 24-inch barrel, so that was my hunting rifle. And then the 257 Weatherby with that 28-inch barrel, I actually got one of those and scoped it up and, you know, shot one buck with it. But when that 280 came out and I started handling it and shoot it, that's what I've shot the last 3 or 4 deer with, and that's what I plan on using this year for the several deer hunts that I've got in the calendar.
You know, I first learned about the 280 Ackley probably 30 years ago when Kenny Jarrett made one from Dad way back. And he was saying, look, you get a 7 mag performance with less recoil in a better cartridge design. And he was just well ahead of the popularity. In fact, I think that was probably even before it became a factory round.
Oh, yeah, it was, because I think it was 2007 that Nosler, you know, did the Sammy specs on it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know that, because Joe had a custom one made up, and Joe Clayton, that is. And he was telling me about how great it was and that we need to get Ruger to make us a number one like that. And at the time, I thought it was still a Wildcat. No, I just had not kept up with that. And I guess I saw somewhere that Savage had their 110 chambered part. And I said, well, my Lord, if Savage is chambering it, then it's got to be a Sammy spec round. And so I did look it up and saw that it was. And said, well, we got a chance, Joe, to get Ruger to make this. And after a few months of talking to some of my friends at Ruger, it happened. But it's just it's a fantastic round. And it's interesting in that the 280 Remington, as good a round as it was never factory loaded to its potential. Because if you remember, and you're old enough to remember, the 740 autoloader and the 760
right.
Remington pump were the first two chambers.
Yeah, so they kept the pressures down, and so the 280 never performed as well as it could have, and as well as it does with hand loads. And then, but the 280 Ackley, they increased the pressure on that for the factory load, and it is a humdinger. It's a great cartridge.
Yes, it is.
Well, it sounds like I caught you in the middle of doing something. Are you outside by any chance?
I'm outside because it's the only place that I get a signal good enough to not drop out.
That's what happens when you live out in the wilds of Texas, man.
It is. When I'm in the house, my signal is just no good.
So, all right. So you've got your website, ClassicSportingArms.com, and you've got information about collector number ones, but you also have some for sale. Do you have any rifles in stock these days?
Well, the website for sale page has never been up to date, but I do have a lot of Ruger number ones that are available. I don't know how many, but as I kind of tell people, I've got more than anybody in the world. So,
wouldn't be surprised. So if they're not on the website, what do people need to do? They just need to contact you and say, what do you got, or tell you what they're looking for?
They just need to call me or email me from the numbers that's on the website.
All right, you go to ClassicSportingArms.com. I'm sorry?
That's it. I really intended that website to be more, you know, stories and articles about Ruger number ones and different hunting stories. And there's a few of those on there. I still got a couple to get on there. I shot a pretty good non-typical buck in Texas last season before last now that I don't even have that story on there yet.
Well, you get busy, man. What else are you doing these days?
I'm retired and getting old. That's what I do.
Yeah, I hear you, but it's all fun. Well, I just want people ought to go take a look at it. ClassicSportingArms.com. Lee Newton, thank you so much for being on here, and it's really good to spend some time with you last week up
all
in
right.
Lewiston.
Good to see you these last at the NRA and at the Jack O'Connor Center.
That's right. All right. You take care, my friend.
All right. Thank you.
Good stuff. Good rifles. Good people. If you ever had a hankering for one, maybe you're in a caliber that you think's not available these days, just check with Lee. Chances are he's got one. 866-TALK-GUN. Now we're open lines.
Some say a silenced gunshot is the baddest sound out there. At Silencer Central, we have another favorite. It's the sound of silence delivered to your front door. When you buy from Silencer Central, we handle your application, set you up with a free NFA gun trust, and deliver your silencer straight to you. With an average 90-day turnaround time when you use e-forms, buying a silencer is simpler than ever. Visit silencercentral.com and we'll help you get started.
For over 75 years, the Hodgdon family and Hodgdon Powder Company employees have been passionate about hunting and the shooting sports. Hodgdon is now the largest U.S. supplier of smokeless powder and black powder substitute propellants. Hodgdon continues to expand with the addition of Accurate Powders and Ramshot to the Hodgdon family. Offering the same standard of quality, the Accurate and Ramshot brands make it easier to load and are available as rifle, handgun, and shot shell powders. Hodgdon Powder Company, the gunpowder people.
Visit guntalk.com/win to enter GunTalk's latest giveaway. Two grand prize winners will receive the Rock Island Armory TM-22 20 or 18-inch rifle with $200 of Norma USA's TAC-22 ammunition. Three additional winners will receive $200 of Norma USA's NXD or MHP defensive ammunition. Enter now through June 30th at guntalk.com/win.
Check out the future of optics at ATN. ATN Optics unites top-of-the-line performance with state-of-the-art technology in thermal and digital day and night systems that allow you to do more. Are you a hunter or a shooter? ATN Optics gives you that edge to perform better and bring home the big prize. Find yours now, along with monthly promos and deals, at the ATN website.
It's funny, just thinking about the Ruger number one, single shot. It's a falling block, kind of a Farquharson design. It's so classic looking. As it just sits there, it's a thing of beauty. The lines are nearly perfect. And it's been chambered in, holy cow, everything from 22 Hornet to 400, 450, 458, Win Mag, on and on. You can find it in almost anything. But I was thinking about it and thinking, why do I like them so much? Well, first of all, I like quirky. I like different. I'll tell you about what I just did with that. Weird. I just have to laugh at myself sometimes. But it's also completely ambidextrous. And I shoot from the left shoulder. I shoot handguns right-handed, long guns left-handed, left dominant eye. And they're completely ambidextrous. It is, you know, just a lever. You flip out the empty, you put in a fresh one, got to feed it in yourself. Tang safety. They just look good, they feel good, and they make me happy when I look at them. They're just beautiful. I'll tell you in just a sec, I'll tell you a bit more about what I did this week. Orphans. I like orphaned cartridges and guns. Holy cow. 866 Talk Gun. Line 2. JJ's with us out of Florida. Hey, JJ, talk to me.
Hey, Mr. Gresham. How are you, sir?
I am good.
I'm looking for a bolt action. It's a Ruger American rifle. And it's in 300 blackout. What can you tell me about that cartridge? Is it...
why?
223-556.
Yeah. What? Now, when you say you're looking at one, you've got one located that you might buy?
Yes, sir.
Why the 300 blackout? What do you know about it? And why would you be looking at a rifle in that cartridge?
Well, I really wasn't. I was looking for something in a 223, but then salesman at the gun counter, you know, said, hey, we got this 300 blackout, but I didn't know anything about it, so.
Okay. Well, I can give you kind of a brief rundown. It's a 30 caliber cartridge shooting, you know what, think of it as about a 30-30 in power. That's probably not bad.
I have a 30-30, so.
Okay. The reason that the 300 blackout became popular was because you could load it with heavy bullets, like 220-grain bullets, and then it's subsonic. It actually is going slower than the speed of sound. And so I'm sure that Ruger American you're looking at has a threaded barrel, so you could put a suppressor on it. It becomes crazy quiet at that point, which is fun.
Yes, sir.
And could be useful. But the question is, you know, depending on what you want to do with it, you limit yourself a bit. I don't think it's an all-around cartridge, but it has some uses. So I guess the question is, what do you want to do with it?
Basically, just plinking with it and stuff. Like I say, I was really looking for another 223 or another AR-556, but, you know, they had brought that up, and I just didn't know anything about it. So I figured you would know, you know.
Well, if you're going to shoot suppressed... it is great fun, especially if you get some heavy bullets, some subsonic ammo. It's insanely quiet, especially out of a bolt action, because you don't even have the action opening and making noise and letting the gas out that way. And if you're going to do that, I think it would be great. If you're not going to do that, I would probably go back to your original thought as to find something in a .223 or another caliber. I think you may be giving away some performance and not getting the benefit from it if you're not going to go suppressed.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the information. Thank you.
There you go. Oh, yeah. And Jim mentioned you can always get a 300 blackout upper for an AR. Just swap it out with a 223 upper and go back and forth. But here's the issue there. Be very, very careful because it is conceivably possible. It's not supposed to happen, but it's conceivably possible, and people have done it, to actually get a 300 blackout round to chamber in a 223 and fire and blow up your gun. So for that reason alone, I don't personally have any 300 blackout ARs. Just kind of an ammo thing. Appreciate the call, sir. Let's see. Lewis is on 4 out of North Bend, Oregon. Lewis, you're on Gun Talk. What's up?
Hey, Greg. Well, I've got a good dad story for you.
Okay.
Back in 1950, I was about 9 years old. And Dad, we were living in Powers, and Dad went down to Coquille and bought a new spinning outfit. Cost $50. And he got 50 tickets to win a 300 Savage rifle, 199. Uh-huh. Well, Mom thought that the rifle was already over, so she gave me the tickets for a 9-year-old to go out and play with, and I lost most of them. So Dad came up and said, okay, where are those tickets at? And Mom told him the news, and I tell you, I was in trouble.
Oh,
you
geez.
Know what? He went down there with a few tickets, and he won that Model 99.
Oh, son of a gun.
So I was off the hook.
Yes, you were. Well, the Model 99, one of the great classic rifles of all time, lever action, and you said this was in 300 Savage?
It was 300 Savage. It was, about a 1950 model. EG, I believe it was.
Yeah, that is terrific. Any chance you still have that gun?
You know, when Dad passed away, one of the nephews got it, and I inquired about it and didn't hear anything back, but I do have one exactly now that I have.
Excellent.
That I just picked up.
That is terrific.
It's exactly the, it's the EG, and I also have a 99C, mm-hmm. which is a 1970 model. It's in 243.
Nice. So, very nice. Those are great rifles. Lovely story. I love that. Thank you, Lewis. I appreciate that one. Yeah, talk about first rifles and all. And we talk about semi-automatic rifles with detachable box magazines. Evil, evil rifles. Except that in 1962, I was 11 years old, and my first rifle to hunt deer with was, and this is my dad, Gritz, got it for me, or he let me use his, actually. It's a Winchester Model 100, semi-automatic, detachable box magazine. And not in the wimpy .223 cartridge. This was in a .308. A .308, much more powerful than a .223, much more powerful than what most AR-15s are chambered for. And here's this scrawny little Coke bottle glasses, 11-year-old kid, me, using that to take my first deer. I think I had a 2.5-power Bushnell with that magnetic post. You turn a ring and a little post pops up in the crosshairs, and you turn it and it pops back down. You have just crosshairs. Kind of fun. And, got a little whitetail buck at about, 30 yards, something like that. And why? Well, you have less recoil with the gas-operated semi, and it just worked. Why? And the other question is, why not? It's just a different kind of action on a rifle. Semi-automatic, bolt action, lever action, single shot. It just doesn't matter. Pick the one you like. Pick the one that works for you. 866-TALK-GUN. I'm Tom Gresham. We'll be right back with more Gun Talk. You know, we talk about the battle to maintain, regain our Second Amendment rights, our gun rights, our rights guaranteed by the Constitution, not granted. And we've covered that a fair amount. And it is a constant battle because we are always under attack, whether it's from the federal government, state governments, cities, different groups out there. They're always hammering away, nibbling away, always using the dismissive term common sense gun laws. Why can't you just be for common sense gun laws? That's all we're asking. Of course, it's dismissive because if you oppose it, then by their definition, you have no common sense. Nice tactic, except that, of course, now we know it's all just silly. We don't pay much attention to that. But the point here is that the fight is constant, the fight is real, and the fight is sometimes very serious. And we're actually doing very well, I would offer, in the courts. In state legislatures, it's tough. But in the courts, I think we're making a lot of headway. I think we've had a lot of groundwork has been laid over the last 20 or 30 years in terms of law journal articles, decisions, Heller, McDonald, and a number of others. And yet the fight is always there. They're always coming at us. We can never relax. Case in point, one that just came out of Pennsylvania, where it's a win, but I think we need some more details. Joshua Prince is the attorney, Firearms Policy Coalition, working on this. Joshua, thanks for joining us. I wonder if you could kind of bring us up to speed on this case, and then we'll spin off to some others.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Tom. So this case stemmed from several ordinances that the city of Pittsburgh published back in 2018. And basically, at the time that they were trying to enact these ordinances, they recognized the fact that they did not have the power to enact them. And what the three ordinances were, one was an assault weapon ban, the other was a high-capacity magazine ban, and then the third was its own red flag law. So they moved forward after even recognizing the fact, and by they, I mean not just the mayor, but also all of city council recognized the fact that they did not have the legal authority to enact these ordinances, but said that they were going to do it anywhere in the hopes that it would spur discussion in Harrisburg, our state capital.
So wait, when you say they didn't, when you say they didn't have the legal authority, what do you mean?
So here in Pennsylvania, we have preemption that preempts any local form of government from regulating in any manner firearms and ammunition.
Okay, got it.
So, you know, there's been some disputes over the years over how broad our preemption statute is. And we have a case from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court in Ortiz, where the Pennsylvania Supreme Court basically said that pursuant to our constitutional provision, Article 1, Section 21, that it in essence is absolute, that only the General Assembly can regulate firearms and ammunition, because otherwise you have this patchwork of laws across the Commonwealth that no one could possibly know. Yet different municipalities, especially those ones that tend to be more liberal, like Philadelphia, as I call it, in Pittsburgh, continually violate our law. Now, the other thing is that the violation of our preemption is actually a criminal offense. It's a misdemeanor of the first degree, which is our highest level misdemeanor crime. And yet we can't get a single district attorney here in Pennsylvania to prosecute any of these individuals involved in violating our preemption statute.
Okay, so they're breaking the law by passing these regulations, but clearly no district attorney is going to take that and prosecute it. One of the things I wanted you to touch on, and I know there's a lot to cover here, is that what was interesting to me is that you're working on this and end up winning the case, but on the other side, you actually have lawyers from the Everytown, the Bloomberg Group, being funded by the Bloomberg money, representing the city.
Correct. And it's a double frustration because first and foremost, you have local taxpayers paying in to their city councils and the local municipalities, and those municipalities are utilizing the taxpayer money to violate the law. And then secondarily, you have these out-of-state entities like Everytown Law coming in and saying, we'll also additionally support you if you pass this type of unlawful regulation, and that we'll provide you attorneys and that to fight it in the courts, even though everyone already acknowledges that it's unlawful to do such.
All right. I am not an attorney, and often when I make suggestions like this, it's kind of like, their lawyers roll their eyes like, yeah, you really don't understand. But the thing that pops into my head is you don't have to wait. Sometimes you don't have to wait for a district attorney. You can actually file a lawsuit under RICO statutes. Is that a possibility here?
So there has been private criminal complaints here in Pennsylvania that can be filed with the district attorney in Allegheny County, which is where Pittsburgh's located, and he declined to even review the private criminal complaints.
Wow.
That resulted in a separate case going up where just about 2 weeks ago, the same appellate court, the Commonwealth Court here in Pennsylvania, reversed the district attorney and said that was an error of law because he never even investigated the private criminal complaints. And under our rules of criminal procedure, he's required to investigate them. When people came and tried to file them, he had a prepared letter just saying, I'm sorry, I'm not even going to consider any private criminal complaints against the council members of Pittsburgh.
Interesting. So what happens with that case?
So now it goes back and yes, you know, it's in essence a reprimand of the district attorney in Allegheny County. But what's really going to happen? As long as he investigates, he still has discretion of whether or not to prosecute. So I really don't think you're going to see any change in his position. But let's say I'm wrong. Let's say he now decides to prosecute. Do you want someone who really doesn't want to prosecute these individuals to be the one prosecuting?
Yeah.
Could he basically establish negative case law?
That's a good point. He could establish a precedent that is negative to you, so you don't want to push that one. And by the way, I interrupted you in the middle of telling the story about the Pittsburgh. You actually were able to stop this effort and get a ruling against Pittsburgh on these illegal, I do mean illegal, gun control laws that they passed.
That's correct. And we had filed suit as soon as the ordinances became effective, as soon as they were enacted. We filed suit. We were able to get an injunction staying any enforcement of them while the court considered it. The trial court found in our favor, found that these all were violative of our state preemption, and then the city of Pittsburgh appealed. And that didn't come as any surprise, because the city of Pittsburgh, as well as Everytown Law, has stated from the get-go that their sole intent is to get these issues up before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, which is a separate issue of concern, because unfortunately, back in 2015, the electorate here in Pennsylvania couldn't get out to vote, didn't see the importance, even though we had four Pennsylvania Supreme Court positions open for election. And now we have a very liberal court where we have four very liberal justices and two Republican justices on it.
You know, and that's such a shame, because if you could just get every Pennsylvania deer hunter to show up, you could win every election.
Absolutely. But they don't realize the importance of electing our judges here in Pennsylvania. I think that's one of the most important things we do here in Pennsylvania. In the federal system, we don't have that option. But here in Pennsylvania, we, the people, get to decide who is going to sit in these seats, and yet people just don't understand the importance of getting out, learning who the individuals are who are running for these judicial positions, and then going out and voting for those that are aligned with your beliefs of the Constitution.
Exactly. Joshua, hold on a second. I'm going to hold you over. When I come back, I want to talk just a little bit about kind of where we are in the importance of the legal system and fighting this battle, because, you know, it's definitely in the legislatures, maybe in Congress, but so much of the action is taking place in courts, and it's that old, yeah, okay, what can I do, or what's in it for me, or how do I help kind of a deal. We're talking with Joshua Prince. He's an attorney working on this, working with the Firearms Policy Coalition. We'll be right back with more Gun Talk.
Meet the P322, 6 hours first U.S.-designed and manufactured 22 pistol, offering 20 plus one round capacity, more than any other compact 22 on the market. The SIG P322 is optics ready and features a thread adapter, a single action trigger with interchangeable shoes, and fully adjustable fiber optic sights. Compact and comfortable. Check out the SIG P322 today at SIGSauer.com.
Celebrating 75 years of innovation wasn't enough for Timney Triggers. Timney decided to go big and introduce a game-changing Alpha Competition Series trigger for handguns, a first for the company. Currently available for Glock Gen 3s, 4s, and 5s, these new triggers offer a 3-pound trigger weight and crisp trigger break designed to keep you on target. And like all Timney triggers, are easy to install and come with a lifetime warranty. Find out more at TimneyTriggers.com.
Hunters carry on traditions, passing on a legacy for preserving wildlife to the next generation. They are committed to conservation and caring for our natural resources. Hunters are wildlife conservation's best-kept secret and hold the keys to preserving our natural world. At Ducks Unlimited, we understand how a hunter's time and generosity are key to the survival of waterfowl and other wildlife. Please visit ducks.org to learn more on how you can help.
Visit Brownells.com for the best parts, tools, and accessories to get your build on. Building an AR? Brownells has the best uppers, lowers, barrels, handguards, and parts. What about a custom pistol build? Brownells has both 80% and complete handgun frames, slides, and barrels to make your handgun what you want. Brownells also has articles and videos to help you build and customize your firearms. Go to Brownells.com and start your gun build today.
All right, I'll have an update on the GT25, our 10mm gun talk pistol, in just a minute. Right now, we're talking with Joshua Prince, attorney working with Firearms Policy Coalition. Joshua, you're working on a number of other cases all the time, and I'm wondering if you might just address, just generally, the role of these lawsuits in terms of gun rights and what happens if we're not able to fight these things.
They're very extremely important. As we see time and time again, the courts are ruling, as you had alluded to earlier, in our favor. There are obviously instances, especially when we look at like the Ninth Circuit in that, where generally speaking, the court is far more liberal and makes more political decisions than decisions based on our Constitution. Yet we see throughout the United States, on average, the courts are finding in our favor. The problem is that, as I alluded to earlier, individuals where they live in states where we elect our judiciary, they don't spend the time to actually learn who's running for judge, what that person's views are, and then once they know who's appropriate or who fits the mold as they believe appropriate, go out and vote for that person. So that's one of the most important issues for where anyone where we can actually elect our judiciary.
Okay, and of course the other part of it is, the NRA is a lot less involved, still somewhat involved. You got the Firearms Policy Coalition, the Second Amendment Foundation, and a few others, NSSF actually. This stuff costs a lot of money to challenge these things, and you can't just let them sit there. You got to go challenge them, because if you let it sit there, it just becomes law or becomes fact. But it's very expensive and time-consuming to do this.
That's absolutely accurate. And it's extremely unfortunate. And we see that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives has figured that out. And we're seeing all these rulemaking initiatives by the ATF, because they know that, in essence, the only option for someone to challenge it is to go into court and spend tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars challenging their rulemaking. We're still challenging the bump stock rulemaking. That's
right.
Still our case, the Firearms Policy Coalition case, is still up before the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. So these cases take a very long time to get through the courts. And even if you're successful, at the end of the day, generally speaking, there's no right to attorney's fees or costs, because the government is a sovereign. It is king, and you can't get money from the king. So these organizations spend extensive amounts of resources fighting these things, and it becomes a death by a million cuts. And that's exactly what Everytown Law and these other organizations are doing, is they're figuring we'll just bleed all the pro-Second Amendment organizations dry by bringing these frivolous suits that, you know, we know we're going to lose, but as long as we keep, you know, litigating them, at the end of the day, at some point, they won't have resources to litigate these issues anymore.
But to put a fine point on it, Michael Bloomberg, the billionaire, makes more money in a day than all of the gun rights groups put together will have in the next 10 years. Literally. He makes more money in a day than they're going to have in the next 10 years. That's the kind of resource we're talking about. It's why people have to get involved. Let me ask you a question, because I know you work with individual gun stores as well, FFL holders. What's going on I'm not going to have enough time for this. We're going to get you back on. I'm right up against my deadline. But I want to talk about what's going on with FFLs and the ATF and their zero policy tolerance policy. Can you talk about that when we come back?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to.
I tell you what, let's do this, Jim. We're going to break our rules. Joshua, hold on. We're going to hold you over the next break, because what we have is a silent assault on gun stores, which means an assault on gun ownership on the part of very quiet, almost in the cover of darkness, I would call it, action by the ATF to shut down gun stores. Joshua can talk about that. This is so important. I think it's worth holding over, and we're going to do this when we come back here. Our number here is 866-TALK-GUN. Also, if you want to check out the other things we're doing, check out GunTalk.com and GunTalk TV. We have lots of videos. I know you'd like them. Hey, coming up in just a few minutes, what's going on behind the scenes at the NRA? Also, the GT25, the Gun Talk pistol that I helped design, is 10mm 1911. It's spectacular. It's gorgeous. Shoots like a house of fire. I think there are about a dozen, maybe a little more than a dozen left. If you have one of those, give us a call. I'd like to get your range report on your GT25. If you're thinking about getting one, you want to run over to DuriesGuns.com and get your order in, because this time, when they're gone, they're gone. All right, we're talking with Joshua Prince. Joshua, I was asking before the break, the ATF has adopted a zero tolerance policy, and I hear that they have shut down roughly 500 gun stores so far, just going through the records. What are you hearing? What's going on here?
So that's very accurate. I don't know the 500 FFL closure number, but based on my own experience and the number of revocation matters I'm handling, I have seen a dramatic increase over what I would call are absurd errors that are committed by FFLs. So
give me an
idea.
How about an example? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So for one example, and I've seen this now across the U.S., is an issue with Rossi firearms. People who have been in the business for a long time may have recollection of Rossi previously being its own business. Then it was bought by Taurus. Now it's owned by CBC. And what we're seeing is FFLs, Federal Firearms Licensees, your gun dealers, will who have been in business for a long time, just believe it's a Rossi firearm because it's still, mm-hmm. even though now it's manufactured by CBC, it will have all the Rossi markings still on it. The box will still say Rossi. So they just put it into their acquisition disposition record as a Rossi. ATF mm-hmm. comes in and says, nope, that's a willful violation of the law because that's actually a CBC manufactured firearm. Now, the other issue you run into is that same dealer may have a true Rossi firearm because it all comes back to when it was actually manufactured and who manufactured it at that time. So you can actually have three different possible manufacturers just of a Rossi firearm, depending on the time when it was manufactured. We're also seeing errors. One of the cases I'm handling right now where a dealer transposed a capital Z for a 2, and they're contending that is a willful violation. If you erroneously believe a capital Z is a 2 and put that into your book in the serial number, mm-hmm. they're contending that's a willful violation. And
what's
we are
going
seeing
on here?
What's
really happening here? Why are they doing this?
Well, it's at the direction of the current administration. The Biden administration has directed ATF to do as much as they can to put gun dealers out of business, that they are no friend to the Second Amendment. And that's exactly what's happening. I had another case where we had a revocation proceeding that we resolved with the director of industry operations for that area. He was in agreement with the agreement we came to. It gets sent up to ATF HQ. Now, the agreement was in January. It gets sent up to ATF HQ, and about 30 days ago, we get notice back. ATF HQ has now rejected the agreement and has told the director of industry operations to move forward with revoking my client's license.
Wow. And this is just what they're doing, and people don't even know about it, what's going on. I know NSSF is working on this hard. I appreciate you working on it. Joshua, I kept you a lot longer than I promised you I would. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for what you do.
My pleasure. Anytime, Tom.
All right. You take care. Yeah, this is this ongoing assault from this current administration. Midterms, what can be done? Well, it's not going to change the administration, but you could certainly have congressional hearings on what's going on, shine the light on it. You know, sometimes when you shine the bright light on it, the cockroaches run for cover because they don't want people to actually see what they're doing and that they're scurrying about. 866-TALK-GUN is the number. Here, when we come back, we'll get an update of what's really going on at the NRA.